The Twilight Concert Series returns to Pioneer Park this summer, every Thursday, July 16th through August 27th. Visit twilightconcertseries.com for the full lineup and more details.
Hi, I'm Alexander Ortega, Managing Editor for Slug, and you're listening to Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, covering music, arts, lifestyle, and events. In this episode, we'll be looking at two local literary journals, Salt Front and Peculiar. Salt Front is an SLC-based literary journal highlighting writers, poets, musicians, and artists. The primary focus of the series is to tell stories of what it means to be human, and they seek out works of expression as opposed to fictional stories or prose. The journal released their third volume earlier this year, making it available in every locally owned bookshop across the Wasatch Front. Slug writer Brian Udall chatted with Michael McLean, Jesse Peterson, and Eric Robertson about the journal.
How did you guys get into the business of, you know, ecological literature? You guys like activists, you know, college degrees?
Well, most of us are graduates from the Environmental Humanities graduate program at the University of Utah. As such, we don't know what the hell to do with that. So, I think it was during one of our last classes together that, I believe, Jesse, you were talking to Brooke Williams, right? About publishing our work, basically, because, you know, it's...
You guys were already writing this sort of, like, literature before you started the journal.
Yeah, we're all authors that deal with that.
Nice.
And so we really didn't have a place for it to specifically go.
Yeah, and, I mean, me and Michael have creative writing backgrounds, and our other editor, who isn't here, Julia Pache, she was, a lit major, and so she was also interested in doing this work, and so it just seemed like a good idea to create a collaborative project or journal where we could share interesting stories.
There's a number of journals out there for peer-reviewed work, so, you know, more scholarly kind of stuff, and there just weren't a lot of outlets for creative work.
Right on.
The kind of stuff that we were writing.
Something more like accessible to like the public kind of stuff.
Exactly. Right on. Yeah, so we just decided to create a home for it on our own.
Did you guys front, you know, the money to create this initially, or did you guys do like a Kickstarter program? Or?
Some of it came out of our own pockets. We owe a huge debt of gratitude to Terry Tempest Williams, who helped get a little bit of money to kind of get it going. I think she had been waiting for some time now for some students to kind of step forward and do something like this.
So she was pretty excited when you popped the idea.
Yes, she was. Nice. And this wouldn't have been possible without her.
Yeah, and also some of our readers, because we did do a crowdfund campaign, and we had good support from the local community.
Nice, so that went well?
Yeah, it was great. So thank you if you contributed.
This is your third issue, just came out. You've been around a year and a half now?
Yeah.
The reception's been good?
Yeah, it's been great. We have had a lot of different people now from across the country starting to submit from all different walks of life. So you've got poets. Michael's got a lot of contact within that world, as does Jesse. Academics from all over the place have submitted some creative nonfiction and fiction as well. And then the issue coming out now, we've got several people from overseas, so from Australia, even an author from Nepal that we're publishing as well.
Great. So that'll be the next issue?
Yeah, that'll be issue 4. So it's gaining traction nationally, which was kind of a surprise, I think, to all of us that it happened that quickly.
Yeah, how did you guys, send it out, the message that you were starting this up?
It was... Yeah, I have no idea, actually. Well, I think Michael's contacts are some, because there's people all over the Intermountain West that Michael has known through working at the book festival. So I think a lot of it came from just word getting out to these people that there was this new...
Kind of mouth to mouth, as opposed to sort of like advertising.
Exactly. Yeah, we have no advertising. This has all just been by word of mouth.
Yeah, one of the beauties of the Environmental Humanities program that we all came out of was that the students came from all over the country. I mean, this was by no means... you know, a majority Utah students. And so that's helped spread the word as well, because a lot of the work in the first two issues came from them. And so they helped spread the word. And if they went on to other graduate studies, they were, you know, telling people about it at their schools or telling people about it in their hometown. And so that helped a lot. And
several of your stories sort of like talk about Utah. So you aren't just focusing on Utah. Like, you're based here, but it's all, it's like an international kind of message.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the stuff is still filtered through Utah because we have this really sort of bizarre ecological situation with our horrible air. Plus, and then of course we you know attract all kinds of ecotourists, if you can call them that, to this state. And then we've got, you know, this crazy mix of really liberal cities among a very conservative state. And so the ecological kinds of things that we want to address, particularly with humans in cities, is sort of this, you know, Utah and Salt Lake City particularly is a microcosm of those larger issues that can be applied all over the world.
Yeah, there tends to be in Utah sort of like this like recurring motif of like nature, like, you know, the ecological like aspect of like Utah, like, regardless of like, you know, political disposition or anything. Like Edward Abbey, you know, we're like sort of like known for like, you know, the southern Utah, like the Red Rock and whatnot. But so it's like, how do you guys fit in with that sort of like Utah group of like nature?
Well, we're in a really weird position because right now, and I don't know how, if you guys have been keeping tabs on this, I have just recently, because what's happening, and this is very unfortunate, and we're trying to sort of figure this out, but there's a split, a huge schism going on within the environmental community. And one of them says that, look, we have to focus on what humans do in cities. In other words, technology has got to catch up. We've got to provide clean, renewable energy to people who don't have it. Those that do have it have got to cut down. And so they want to focus, instead of focusing exclusively on wilderness and preservation and tourism and all of that, they want to focus on technology. And they have been labeled by the other side as being, well, they self-labeled as well as the eco-modernists. So
the other side being?
Being people who just are talking about wilderness. Let's go preserve the habitats of all of these other species.
Sort of like biophilia kind of stuff.
Well, exactly. We agree with both sides. But what's happening is that the one side is starting to name call the other side and saying, well, you people need to get out more into nature and let this word nature sort of edify you and create this sort of spiritual awakening where
right.
you'll care about it.
Right.
But then the other side is saying, if I'm some kid in the inner city in Los Angeles, how the hell am I going to get to Yellowstone National Park?
Right. Like, and it sounds really nice to be like one with nature,
right.
but like it's not, you know, affecting
right.
me. It's like
right.
it's like an abstract idea.
Yeah. And so one side is concerned more with social justice as it relates to environmental factors, whereas the old guard, which is more of the conservation of these wild places, is more concerned with, we've got to keep drawing lines around rocks until we have all of this preserved space, and then we'll focus on other things. And so they're fighting. And it's getting to the point now where I think it's causing some problems. And so I think we're trying to situate ourselves in the middle of that and say, look, every idea is a good idea with this thing, because if it's CO2 that we're looking at, and if it's climate change, all hands on deck here right now.
Right.
And so we're going to need every good idea.
Yeah, so there's like this sort of like mindset of like the two sides where it's like, you know, like a need, like out of like a, you know, like we need to be, you know, revamping the environment as opposed to like luxury of having the environment.
Exactly, exactly.
I think where you have people who are very passionate about certain topics, you know, any topic, whether it's the environment or whether it's cars or what guitar you like the best or whatever.
Right.
But I think what we're trying to do with the journal is really just kind of broaden that experience, but also do it from, I think, a very honest and truthful place, that we recognize that we're kind of biased human subjects and we have opinions and we feel certain ways. We have basic needs, like we have to eat, you know, we have to use the restroom, we have to sleep, all
right.
of those types of things. And so I think with what we're trying to do is really just validate all of these, maybe not every different discourse, but these discourses that we hear coming from the environmental community, and try to complicate them also to a certain extent, push them further.
Yeah, and see if they can play nice, you know, with each other instead of, you know.
You guys seem to be able to sort of like wrap all of those different sides together. Like you have that sort of like cosmopolitan, like city life environmentalism.
Yeah.
And then you have like this sort of like biophilic spirituality kind of side. And then you have a few stories that are sort of like this like rural sort of like, you know, natural realism kind of stories coming out. So it's cool to see you guys sort of like vamping up the whole, you know, subject as opposed to just sticking to like the one view or the other.
I mean, we're all on the same side. We want to see good action be taken on behalf of people and the place we inhabit, our homes.
Would you guys consider yourselves to be on the, you know, the need as opposed to the luxury side? The need of a better environment as opposed to the luxury of having, like, an environment?
You're going to make us land on one of those.
Am I walking on your coffin a little bit?
Speaking for myself, I mean, I was raised in wilderness. I was raised by wilderness in a lot of ways. Growing up here, being a Boy Scout and going to the Wind Rivers in southern Utah, it's still a huge part of me. But I understand that as a white American, my carbon footprint is insane, and so I have to stop doing as much of that as I can. And so, yeah, mine would be, let's everybody just sit down and chill out and stop going places for a while. And that kind of doesn't sit well with some people who are traveling all over the world in planes, you know, tons of carbon pollution,
right,
trying to, you know, get everybody to be more ecologically minded while being, you know, at 10,000 feet in a plane. So I'm sort of on the need side where we need to figure out cities before we can even deal with nature.
Think about the effects of our, you know, works.
Yeah, we publish a book. It's made of trees.
Yeah,
you can never get away.
It's just, it has ink, and so I mean, there's just a big tension, right? Mm. I mean, the way you live your life, there's no. I'm of the belief that there's no one particular way that's always going to continuously improve the lives of other people. I mean, there's always trade-offs and balances. And so with this issue, I think that the point is, or not with this issue, but with our journal, it's just about recognizing that tension. It's acknowledging that, you know, we are often complicit in environmental degradation, but at the same time, we can plant a tree simplify the matter, but...
Well, and I think part of what we're doing as well is rejecting this kind of notion of that there's nature and then there's humans. That dichotomy is patently false.
As if there's a border between us.
Right. Exactly.
And both of the groups that Eric described a little bit earlier still, to certain degrees, embrace that notion that there's this border that you cross and suddenly it's wild. And I think we really openly reject that and encourage people who are submitting work to us to explore ways in which that no longer remains true for them, and in which cities are wild, just as wild as the wild places that we seek to preserve, you know, through federal policies or whatever they may be.
I remember I got into the environment a few years back with Derek Jensen's Deep Green Resistance book.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that whole movement. And the thing that pushed a lot of people away, including myself, was that their mindset was save the environment at any cost.
Yeah.
And so they would, you know, at any rural people who were relying on this were gonna suffer from their effects or not.
Yeah.
They just did it anyway. And a lot of people were like, well, we still gotta have that balance. And it's still that same sort of mindset where there's a difference between the wilderness and there's humankind, and they're just on the side where save the wilderness, yeah, you know, forget about everyone else. We just need to do this.
Yeah.
I think, I think there's lots of probably good reasons to, you know, think that way. Obviously, there's lots of good reasons to think, you know, in other ways, and something that, you know, we're pretty consistent with, I think, in terms of the tone we try to reach is we try to reject anthropocentrism, right, centering on human, but also just retain a sense of our own human subjectivity, that
right,
we are people, right?
Right,
and decentering ourselves to a sense of a deep ecology. Ecocentrism may not be possible, right, either.
And it would be nice to have just a switch, all right, clean air,
clean
fuel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's
right,
a little bit more, you know, there's thousands of switches. So it's you know, which ones do we turn on, which ones do we turn off?
Yeah, I think it's just we each individually have to do what we can do to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And part of, there was an article actually making the rounds today from a writer that's part of a group called Dark Mountain.
Did you see that? I saw that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Guy named Chris Smage, who he's basically pointing out, and Eric mentioned the eco-modernist before, this idea that kind of technology will save us in the end. That's the only route that we can take at this point. And he just points out the fact that for every technology we develop here that makes first world life more, you know, easier and more efficient,
right,
there's people in a third world nation, you know, mining the elements that make up that technology.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Ultimately making their lives more polluted, their lives more impoverished. We have to acknowledge that tension.
Yeah.
That for, you know, every amount of improvement in a first world nation, there's going to be problems that arise elsewhere, and that we have to strike a balance somewhere.
And it's easy just to sort of shut that out. But
right. It's the easiest thing in the world because it's definitely very difficult to say, okay, Dark Mountain Project is this thing out of England that we're all sort of associated with. And he's Paul Kingsnorth, who started it, is going to be here, phoning it in, by the way. So he's actually not taking the plane to come here at our invitation, but to actually phone it in and say, look, I believe in this. I want to be part of this conversation. But I'm going to use the technology that is there so that I don't produce any more CO2. And there really isn't any, that I can think of, environmental intellectuals of any kind that are saying, I'm not going to that conference. I'm going to phone it in to that conference. They're still getting in planes, getting in cars, and driving to these places. So right. This guy is doing some really cool stuff. But what they're forgetting to understand is that progress is a weird thing, because progress for white Americans is very different than progress for, you know, people living in the Amazon basin. If it's just, I want a light bulb in a house at night, that's progress for them. And we have to see to that, to see that they can in some way improve their lives with this technology. So progress for us is, like, you know, Michael was saying, it's damaging everybody else. And so there's this weird tension going on. And so I think each side, the eco-modernist versus the conservationist, they're not talking to each other. They keep throwing, name-calling. I mean, it gets kind of rancorous. And there's a bunch of stuff coming out now, especially with Dark Mountain and with this eco-modernist manifesto that is... Now we've got this tension going on, and that's the last thing we need, because we need to get going on this issue.
Yeah. Well, and in a country that's so kind of divided in two to begin with, anytime you have infighting within one of those sides, you're subject to all kinds of problems from ultimately that other side of the larger picture.
That doesn't give a shit.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It's been great talking to you guys. Everybody should check out Saltfront, saltfront.org, or you can get in contact with them at saltfront@gmail.com. Look out for their journal. It's at plenty of bookstores in Salt Lake. These guys are great.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
The Twilight Concert Series returns to Pioneer Park this summer, presented by the Salt Lake City Arts Council, every Thursday, July 16th through August 27th. The series brings together an eclectic selection of performers from various genres, all at an affordable price for a massive audience to attend. Tickets are on sale in advance at 24tix.com for $5, or for purchase the day of the show for $10. Gates open at 5 p.m. and music starts at 7 p.m. Visit twilightconcertseries.com for the full lineup and for more details.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie!
Peculiar is a queer-centric literary journal produced in Salt Lake City. The journal features stories, poetry, art, and photography created and produced by the members of the LGBTQ community. They recently released their first issue in physical and PDF formats and are currently taking submissions for the second volume until September 27th. Slug writer Brian Udall also sat down with the editors Jack Garcia and Aaron Gates to talk about the journal and the works inside.
They just had their first publication come out in print, and it just sold out like immediately after it got, you know, printed. How do you guys feel about that?
It was really awesome. Like, we were super hopeful that would happen, but it probably did it even faster than we thought it would. In probably a month and a half to 2 months, we had already sold out of all of our copies that we printed.
So the reception's been really good.
Yeah, it has been. And we did a launch party a couple months after we actually printed it, but it was at Pioneer Book in Provo, and that was really pretty successful event, and that's where we sold out of all the rest of them.
Yeah, well, you just showed up with them and everyone just walked away.
Yeah,
them.
We did.
Right on. You guys used a Kickstarter program to sort of start this up. How did that go?
Yeah, it went awesomely. We were we just kind of had the idea. We're like, okay, we don't really have a ton of our own money to do this, but we think it's a really cool idea that people around here would probably support. And so we just went through Kickstarter, looked up a couple of the best ways to do it, and threw some videos up talking about our project and why we were doing it, and went about $150 over our goal. So it was really awesome.
That's great. Oh, what kind of rewards did you guys have in place for that?
Free copies of the book for a lot of people. If you donated more, you got your name in the book with like a little thank you note from us. So there's a special thanks page mentions a few people.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Were there any like LGBT organizations outside of the Utah or even in Utah that sort of like contacted you?
Not yet. I feel like we're slowly like building a name. So a lot of organizations probably still don't know we even exist, but...
Yeah, we're just kind of just starting to get noticed by a couple places in Salt Lake now, so
like
hopefully...
Utah Pride, didn't they talk to us?
I think... Oh, yeah, we did. We did talk to Utah Pride, and we recently set up a connection, hopefully, with the Pride Center, so...
Did you guys have a booth at the last festival?
We didn't. We should have, but we did not think ahead.
Had you guys been published at that point?
Just barely.
Just barely. It was, like, right around that
weeks.
Time.
Right on.
Did we come out in May, and then it was, like, June?
The beginning of June.
So we just didn't think ahead of time. Yeah. As far as like getting booths done, but Provo has a Pride festival coming up in September.
Very cool.
It's, I mean, it's smaller than Utah Pride's in Salt Lake, but we will have a booth there.
Cool. When is that taking place?
That's September 19th. Is the Provo's Pride Festival.
Right on. Mm-hmm. And it's just in like the park.
It's at Memorial Park, which is like 800 East Center Street.
Cool.
So just take the Center Street exit in Provo, and you'll
hopefully you guys get some representation there.
Yeah,
sort of get
nice.
Noticed by
it'll
the people
be
who
just
yeah. have an interest.
Just before our deadline for this next issue. So if anybody wants to submit, it's September 27th is the deadline, and you can just go to peculiarjournal.com and submit there. And we're looking for poetry, prose, art, photography. This first issue is mostly writing and without art. We didn't get a lot of submissions in that direction the first time around, so we're hoping for more.
As far as like drawing and photography kind
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, kind of that kind of thing to fill up our pages. Luckily, we worked with Emily Mattson, who did a great job with the book design. So if you like thumb through it, like there's a lot of like different fun little illustrations and things that she did to make it look exciting. But
right on.
We'd like to feature some artists.
Yeah.
So the deadline is September 27th, and that thing is September 19th. So it's like
last
one
chance
last
to get
little,
some more
like,
word
push
out.
To maybe help that.
Yeah, yeah. Get a little, notice or whatever.
Yeah.
So you guys, I mean, Provo is sort of like the heart of like Mormon youth culture. How does it feel to be sort of like in that kind of environment and be sort of representing queer youth?
It's been a really cool opportunity. I've been living in Utah for about 3 years now. I'm from Pennsylvania originally. And so coming to this kind of unique culture around here and coming out as gay during that time and different things just kind of made me very aware of the situation and the way things are around in Utah and Provo and just kind of meeting a lot of the LGBT people around that area and kind of stuff that they go through. And so it's been really awesome to just do this as a way to represent that and kind of express it. The journal, especially our first issue, is just a really awesome representation of the way that LGBT issues interact with the Mormon culture around here, and just like not in a bad way or a good way or anything, just kind of how it's a spectrum of things that I think are very unique compared to other states around.
Yeah, it's definitely a different sort of like mindset when it comes to sort of like things that, because it's a little bit of a conservative state. So,
yeah,
approach that a little bit and try and like work your best. But, there's always that reception. But even still, a lot of the through most of like the writings in your journal had Christian undertones. Was that like intentional, or was it just sort of like how that planned out?
It just happened that way. And I think it's just the kind of writing that is going to come out of this area. I feel like that's what kind of makes the journal more special, because I know there's other LGBT publications nationwide, I'm sure, but
yeah.
With this one having like a Utah focus, you're going to get that Mormon undertone.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Just because most of us come from that.
Yeah, because a lot of other places, you see certain places where there isn't that much of a background, there can be a divide between Christian religions and LGBT things, but it's all kind of forced together in Utah, and so I think that just came out through people's writing.
You think maybe that's helping sort of like people who don't really understand that whole culture, the queer LGBT youth culture, to sort of like accept it a little bit more, because it is sort of like somewhat familiar since they're talking about the same morals and values regardless of this specific issue?
I think that's what we hope it does. That's kind of like the purpose. We want it to be able to affect that conversation and get people from here to talk about it more and kind of improve that. So I would like to think that it's doing that, but that's certainly what we're shooting for.
Sort of have a conversation about it as opposed to just sort of like sticking to the same old like answers to these questions.
Exactly.
Just force people to see things differently in Utah County.
Mm-hmm.
And give people a platform, I think, too, to have their voices heard where maybe they didn't feel like they had it.
No doubt. Yeah, it's definitely like as far as like LGBT youth goes, I know like stories of people who have sort of been, you know, they come out and their family is still living at home and their family is just sort of like blew it up out of proportion a little bit and just sort of freak out a little bit. Have you guys seen a lot of that like in your like interactions with like the queer youth in Utah? Or?
I've seen it somewhat. I've been kind of involved. I have a lot of friends involved with like USGA, which is kind of like the college student BYU gay organization that they have in Provo. And I've seen a lot of it from people in that, just experiences through that. And so that was definitely a motivator a lot to, you know, want to do this and kind of improve that. Plus, they always talk about the statistics for the amount of LGBT homeless teens that there are in Utah. And so it's certainly a reason why we wanted to try and get things improving.
Right. In fact, some of our authors have used like aliases, pseudonyms to write under.
Right. Make them a little more comfortable writing in this sort of like open publication.
Just even that kind of points out that like people still kind of feel the need to hide, I guess.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate, but
unless they just have sort of like names, maybe they just wanted a cooler name.
So how did you guys get into like literature? Did you guys go to school for this or?
So I'm an English writing studies major at UVU and then.
Yeah, and I just graduated from UVU also. So we're both English majors at UVU down in the Utah Valley. And yeah, so we both just love writing anyways. I know Aaron's worked a lot on different school journals there, like on the editing side, and I've had different things published at the school journals too, so.
I had a couple of friends who went to the UVO. It seems like a nice little counterculture in that sort of like, in, you know, the Provo,
Utah
area.
It's a pretty good school.
Yeah, it's very awesome.
Yeah,
for that, there's a lot of just a lot of open discussion about things, which I think sometimes isn't seen as that in Utah County. But UVU is really good for that, of just seeing all these different kind of mindsets.
They're not scared to sort of like talk about these issues that, you know, BYU will not handle.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have that in that area for sure.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about legalization of gay marriage in Utah? Catch you by surprise. It's great.
There was definitely, I probably would never have guessed Utah to be so kind of forward, like early on in it, but it was super awesome.
Okay, and you think of Utah and gay marriage, you're like, oh, they'll be the last,
right?
Like one of the first, and it's like, oh, cool.
I mean, they were kind of forced a little, but it happened. But yeah. And now it's nationwide, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm actually married,
congratulations.
So that's pretty sweet. We got married before that happened, though, in New York, but it is nice to know that it's just nationwide.
It's all over now.
I don't have to worry about that.
So. Yeah. It's a nice little smoothing of the lines or whatever.
Right.
So as far as like plans for releasing like later publications, are you going to be doing like bookstores? Are you doing online mostly? Like how are you planning on doing that?
So mainly we've been shooting for online right now, but we have talked to a couple places that hasn't really worked out yet, but we would love to try and get copies of the journal in different places that would be willing to sell them or carry them. Like we want to hit a couple more bookstores around Salt Lake in different places to see if they'd be willing to as we get the more other issues coming out and everything. So we certainly want to go for that. We went to the online just because it was the easiest way for us at first to do it, but
for sure
we would love for places to be interested in carrying a couple around here.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth a shot just to have that sort of like when you're walking through the bookstore and you like are looking, you're browsing,
and
you
see
this magazine, you're like, oh, what is this? But like as far as the internet goes, you can kind of get, you know,
people
lost
have
in the
to
shuffle.
Know about it, and then they have to go there
and
purposefully like purchase one, right?
Right. So. They have to, to have that sort of like face value kind of area in the bookstores would be nice.
That'd be sweet. So if you know any bookstores,
there's several around the Salt Gary that I'm sure would love to sort of support you guys. But so you talked about submissions September 29th, 27th, you said. So that's the deadline for the next publication.
To get the submissions in, and then hopefully we can have them like read and picked by like October-ish and get it moving.
Hopefully printed by November is basically what
November's
we're shooting
the
for.
Sort of goal.
So we're trying to go for twice a year, so spring and fall.
Nice.
That's the goal.
Like a school schedule.
But yeah, September 27th, hopefully get everything in. Everything's online. Like it's all just an online form you fill out, upload files, and get it into us, and we'll happily get things sorted out for the next issue.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody wanted to get like involved in your sort of, you know, project, besides like submissions, like do you have like volunteer opportunities for people who are like, oh, I want to like do something for you guys?
I guess
to help
we could.
Out?
I mean, right now it's, I guess, not that huge of a project that we need that much help, but
yeah, I mean, we're certainly not like against people helping out, but for the time being, it's still something smaller, like as we get the right. name bigger. So we're not super looking for it right now, but it's not something we're against. Like if someone contacted us and gave interest, we would certainly have leave that consideration then for as we needed help to contact us, like, people.
Most yeah. probably to help read and
readings
things,
and final.
As of right now, we're still trying to drum yeah. up lots of submissions, so it's not crazy. But I mean, hopefully as the journal grows, I imagine there'd be a lot more opportunity to do it.
For sure. Well, it things. Sounds like you guys have got it covered for now, so
yeah.
that's good.
Yeah, the biggest thing really people want to help right now is just getting the word out, trying to share it on different groups in Facebook or their own pages, and just to get the word out so that we can get bigger.
Right, and although we did sell out of the print copy, we do still, you can buy a PDF online, mm-hmm. so you can still get it.
Yeah, so that's just on your website.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right on.
So.
Cool. Well, that's going to wrap this up. Thanks for Jack and Aaron coming in today. They're the editors of Peculiar Journal. You can catch them at peculiarjournal.com or peculiarjournal@gmail.com. And these guys are doing great work. Tell all your friends, queer or straight. You know, everyone should know about this stuff. So, you know, thank you very much for listening.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Slug Sound Waves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundWaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, that's me, Christian Schultz, Henry Glashine, and John Ford. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our show's theme was performed by Temples, our main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd, and the technical design was by Kate Colgan. Next week, we'll be chatting with the beer professor about his work and local brews. Thanks for listening.